A listener production.
I can't believe you're coming to me live from inside a closet.
I'm back in the closet.
Take it away. Take it away, my dulcet-toned Adonis.
Hello, Gistners. Welcome back for another episode of Just the Gist, a weekly-ish podcast in which Rosie Waterland and I, Jacob Stanley, give you just the gist of what you need to know about a story we think you'll find fascinating enough to share at a dinner party. And yes, I am recording this in the quietest place that I could find in my apartment in Port Douglas, which is the closet.
You being back in a closet is about as likely as you not having a tan. You know what I mean? It's just like the weirdest.
I was born this way, baby.
Yeah.
No denying. I love it. I'm proud of both.
I spoke too soon. I jinxed it.
You really did. Everyone's saying I jinxed it.
Mm. Oh, okay, let's just get to breaking news because I jinxed it and the narcissist in me thinks I jinxed it and personally caused this lockdown. Okay. Breaking news. Breaking news. I got the scoop. X-ray. X-ray. Read all about it. Breaking news. It's coming down the wire. I forgot that last bit, the last couple weeks. Oh, my God. Lockdown in SA, in Queensland. What did I do? What did I do? So last episode, you and I were being so gracious. We were like, oh my God, hashtag love to everyone in Melbourne and Sydney. That must be tough. I mean, we're so lucky to be in safe places.
Thoughts and prayers.
And then what was it? A day later? It broke free. It's everywhere.
Yep.
Adelaide's in lockdown. You're in lockdown.
I'm not in lockdown yet. Nothing's come of it yet.
I'm up in far north Queensland. Yeah, but you're too far up.
Yeah, so we're away from that. However, the same day that SA started its little outburst, someone flew into Cairns who had tested positively. So she was very close to where I was. And the irony is, you know, you and I were talking about how skeptical we are when it comes to supernatural things and magic and energies and past lives. And then all of a sudden you prove that you've got the power to cause outbreaks and lockdowns.
I'm more powerful
just by speaking words
than I even understand. It was the power of the troll doll coming through my microphone. And I can't, okay, and do you want to know though? And maybe this is a sign that because most people took our ribbing of mysticism and all that stuff with a humorous grain of salt. But some people did get quite cranky at me for being such a skeptic and being so cynical. And I will say maybe you guys are right. Maybe this is like the spiritual universe throwing it back in my face for being so rude because do you want to know what happened? Caleb and I had already signed a lease for our place in Melbourne, right? But it all happened. He got the job down there quite quickly. It all happened really quickly. So we found this place, signed this lease, and I literally did everything. I organized to have our electricity, our gas, our internet disconnected here. I organized to have it all connected there. I found a mover who, you know, was going to do it for a good price, was going to get it there the exact day we needed to get there. I literally organized everything. Everything's packed. Everything's done. I was like, okay, so we were literally going to get into the car on Monday and leave and drive down to Melbourne with Boo, and everything was perfectly timed. And I think it was the second I like ticked confirm on swapping the last thing over to the new place in Melbourne, the news was like, beep, 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 lockdown coming. And at first I was like, oh, okay, hopefully we'll still be able to move. But then Adelaide got a few more cases. Victoria has declared us a red zone and they won't let us in. So then I had to get back on the phone and try and explain, you know how I just disconnected my everything? I changed my mind. It's been a disaster. They say that moving is like one of the most stressful things you can do. But I would counter that moving and then the move being postponed because you're in lockdown is a little bit extra stressful. Anyway, people who think that I'm a thuggish skeptic, I got mine. The universe got me back.
And now she believes in karma. There we go.
When it personally affects me, I believe. That's like those people who like always say that they believe in God, they believe in God, they believe in God, and then one bad thing happens to them and they're like, I'm an atheist. If God wasn't there for me in that one moment, then he cannot be true. Meanwhile, thousands of children are dying of AIDS in Africa every day. But like, so that's me today. I'm like, I now believe in the spiritual world because it has affected me personally and negatively.
That's narcissism for you, folks.
Isn't it just?
Yeah. So the movie is postponed indefinitely.
Not indefinitely. I mean, Adelaide seems to have a pretty good hold on, we didn't, on the cases, like new cases. We only had like one or something today. We're hoping that we'll only be considered a red zone for while we're in lockdown, which will hopefully only be a week. So hopefully the move is only postponed a week.
Okay. But we've got to wait and see.
Yeah. Our move is still allowed to move our stuff because moving is still allowed to happen. But it's like, well, there's no point taking our stuff because we won't be there. And while we're here, we need stuff here. Yeah. So it's all just a bit of a schmozzle right now. Bit of a schmozz.
And there's not a lot of trust for removalists in the air at the moment.
I know,
as well.
But that's like, I feel bad for, because I was saying to Caleb, like, there must be so many moves happening, hundreds and hundreds of moves across the country happening every day. And there were two incidents where something went dodgy. Like, it's not all, it's not everyone. And also, like, blame the effing government for not having everyone vaccinated and it wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, you're right. Everyone focus your attention on that. Like, that's not on where individuals. The blame needs to be placed, yes.
Yeah, not on individuals, I think. Like, I don't, it's just a schmoz. So,
Spoke too soon.
We're all in this together now. Who's the only safe? Oh, I guess Tasmania and Western Australia. Paradises.
Am I missing something here? Is part of Queensland now in lockdown?
I thought Brisbane was.
I have no idea. I really don't.
You've been in the wilderness, but I haven't. Maybe I should know. Uh-oh. Are you Brisbane? No, I think they've had some cases. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. You're closer to Brisbane than I am. That's how far away I am.
Are you really? Is that how high
so
up you are?
So far north, yeah.
Whoa, that's crazy. I don't understand the, like, what do you call it, dimensions of this country.
Yeah, the scope is enormous. It's
enormous,
isn't
it?
Mind-blowing, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, crazy, crazy. Mm-hmm. So, okay, that's lockdown news. Everything sucks. We were smug with our thoughts and prayers. Damn it. Just everyone get vaccinated if you can. And I know the government has effed it and it's unfair that a lot of people who want to be vaccinated by now can't because there's no appointments and whatever. My sister did tell me to tell you guys that they always have a lot of AstraZeneca appointments available and, you know, it's frustrating watching them go to waste. So, you know, you just have to talk to your GP or a GP about if you are willing to get it, which I think I would have got it. Like, I don't care. But but the thing is, I was reading people argue on Twitter last night, like, you know, why there's so many free AstraZeneca appointments and, you know, people aren't taking advantage of the fact they can get vaccinated. And it's like, sure, maybe, but also the communication of this thing has been so bungled. Like, nobody knows where to go to get it. Nobody knows who to call. They say, talk to your GP, but who our age has a regular GP. I haven't had a regular GP my whole life. I've gone to places that bulk bill because I haven't had money and I just go to a medical center and go to whoever. Like, and you know, people have talked about going online and not being able to find an appointment, or if you can't get your second appointment, it won't let you book your first appointment. And then you call somewhere and you don't, like, it's confusing. It's just been the, like, logistics and the communication of the whole thing has been completely bungled.
Yes, it really has. And we're all paying the price.
We really are. Like, I feel it shouldn't be that you feel lucky that you have a chronic health condition that leaves you eligible to get the vaccine. Like, when I logged on to get mine, it was quite simple. You know, I talked to my doctor about it here and she was like, yep, you're eligible. So I went online, I filled out the thing and it says like, do you have this underlying thing? Yes. And then it's like, okay, you have to get Pfizer and you can get it here and you can get it here. And then I did it and I just went and got it. Like, and it's like, oh, geez, I'm so lucky that I've got a lifelong illness that lets me get the vaccine. That
Thank
shouldn't
God for that
be how it works.
Thyroid of mine. Yeah, right.
That shouldn't be how it works. Mm-mm. It just should be better than this. How has the US given it to like 200 million people and we've barely given it to anyone?
I know, right? The most ironically named country, the United States, that couldn't be less united, and yet somehow they've been able to pull together and get the majority of their population vaccinated. Hats off to them for that.
I know. Anyway, so that's just that breaking news. Oh, listen to us get political. Politics, et cetera. Government. Incompetence, Q&A, hashtag Ozpol. It's just what I see on Twitter. I don't know. All right. Speaking of just rampant incompetence and hilarity, Jeff Bezos went into space in a dick rocket. Okay, let me just provide some context. For those of you who don't know, all the billionaires in the world have decided, let's not put our surplus money towards homelessness or hunger or eradicating disease. Let's put our surplus money into flying ourselves into space.
Yeah.
So I think it was last week or the week before, Richard Branson was the first guy to do a commercial space flight, where it's basically like space tourism.
Yep.
You fly up in a rocket and you don't even really go into proper space. You literally go into the like very first point outside the atmosphere where they're like, yep, that's included in space. You're in space. You did it. You're in space.
Ozone layer. Right.
But yeah, like you're just out of the Earth. And then I think you're apparently, it's zero gravity. So it's at that level. And they were there for less than 10 minutes and then they came back. That's literally it. So Richard Branson did that. Jeff Bezos did it a few days ago and Elon Musk is also about to do it soon. And they're saying, you know, that they're like, you know, don't get angry at us. It's really important to explore, like, where would we be if we hadn't landed on the moon? And it's like, but you're not doing this for noble reasons about expanding the possibilities of Earth. You're doing this because, and everybody knows, A, they're saying it's to make lots of money off space tourism, but like how much money can you really make when only multi-millionaires can afford it? But B, it's because everybody knows that space real estate is now becoming a thing and they all want to get on top of it, where you can put satellites, what part of that part of space you own, whose satellites can go where. It's all about expanding territory to make money.
Colonialism all over
it is. It is into space. And it's like, no wonder they don't give a shit about helping this planet because they know they're taking it, like they're leaving. I can't even. So then Jeff Bezos last week or a few days ago did it. It was him, his brother, some old millionaire lady and this young 18-year-old whose parents bought him a like $1 million ticket for like his graduation or something. And the rocket is shaped like a penis.
Yeah.
Not even in a subtle way. Like to the point where people were like, did he do that on purpose?
Yeah. It has to be intentional.
It has to
be
intentional.
There is no way that slipped through and no one went, oh, wow, that looks an awful lot like a vibrator I saw recently online.
Like if that is not the utmost, most supreme example of a man compensating for something, I don't know what is. Like how did he not see that? How? Unless he wanted people to see, look at my giant space dick. Like that is what he wanted, right?
Probably, yeah. I mean, most buildings and monuments are phallic, and there's certainly some level of intention behind that. The thing that I'd love the most to see coming out of this is all the memes comparing him to Dr. Evil, because they're both shiny-headed bald men, and they both have these genitalia-shaped spaceships. And if you haven't seen the memes, go and find them, because they will make you smile.
But then there's also the other memes that kind of make you angry. Like, for example, Amazon, look, I'm not super on top of these issues, but I know the basics of it, that he runs that company essentially like as close as he can to a sweatshop.
Yeah.
Those workers get paid below minimum wage. His workers get paid so little that they have to rely on food stamps. Mm. They're barely allowed to take bathroom breaks. He won't let them unionize. Like, mm-hmm. So, I mean, there are stories of Amazon workers peeing in bottles because if they stop and lose time, they'll get fired. And like, if you have become a billionaire because you run a company that pays so poorly, your workers rely on food stamps to survive, mm-hmm. how can you then build a dick rocket and fly into space and not feel like a bigger dick than the rocket you're flying in?
Yeah, I know. And then the most audacious thing for him to then thank publicly every Amazon worker and every Amazon customer, because his words, they paid for this.
Yeah,
experience.
You helped pay for this. Yeah.
And the workers in particular paid for it with their blood, their sweat, their tears, their hard labor, and the wages that they sacrificed.
Yes.
And the rights that they sacrificed were
that they
there.
Continue to. But, like, they don't have any other choice, because it's either accept this shitty job or have no job. What do you do?
Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
I cannot remember exactly what the show was, but I will find the link and we'll post it in the show notes here, because it's a really fascinating listen. It's a conversation with someone who has worked on and off in an Amazon warehouse over the course of several years. And the sorts of, because they're all hired through an agency, and that third party agency is able to just hire and fire people willy nilly. If you ever miss a shift, even for the reason that your partner is going into labor and you have to be with them to while they give birth, your employment is terminated immediately. Like,
they have
a zero tolerance policy. No one's allowed to ever skip a shift for any reason whatsoever. And that's just like scraping the surface of how horrendous the conditions are there. And, you know, it's sort of gone unchecked for a long time. I'm actually really hoping the fact that he's done this disgusting display is going to be what wakes people up and makes them decide that they're going to boycott the company. I'm cancelling my Amazon Prime subscription because...
But there's many good shows on there.
I know there are so many good shows on there.
Far out.
Really, really, really good shows, but I'm just not happy continuing to give my money to him. And you know what is also really sickening? There's an Instagram account that I'd recommend you guys follow. Firstly, if you love drag queens and if you love comedy, and also if you like getting political insights, which is something that I've sort of started to get more and more interested in. Official Lady Bunny. Lady Bunny is RuPaul's best friend in the world. They grew up doing drag together. And Lady Bunny's got into posting a lot of political stuff more recently, and she posted that there were more minutes dedicated to Jeff Bezos going to space on TV yesterday than there were minutes dedicated to discussing climate change across all of 2020 last year. Like, he got so much attention for doing this thing, which was, you know, just such a monument to his own ego and his
really
own disgusting wealth, and yet it was celebrated.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so wrong.
And then this is like a few weeks after it came out that his yacht is so big it needs its own support yacht.
Oh.
Yeah. It needs its own support yacht with it to like cater to and service the big yacht.
It's
like, what is this amount of money?
It's disgusting. It should be illegal. It's not right.
They do things to distract us, like, oh my God, you and I are getting so political right now. They do things to distract us to make us think that the world can change through the individual. It's like all those memes that went around the other week when that drilling disaster happened in the middle of the ocean and the ocean was literally on fire and this billion-dollar mining company did this. And it's like, oh, yeah, so we'll keep not using those plastic straws to save the environment, right? And you guys just keep doing what you want. We'll fix climate change by drinking through paper straws. Like they make us feel like, oh, the tiny little things you do are really important. Meanwhile, they do whatever they want.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's disgusting.
I know.
You know, half of the US is on fire or experiencing a heat wave right now. China and parts of Europe are being flooded out because of unprecedented rain levels. And yet everyone's excited about the fact that a trillionaire went to space, another one. Like, it's not even as if he was the first one.
No. Yeah. Richard Branson won. Richard Branson won that dick swinging contest. Well, speaking of, okay, and this is, I don't know if this is true. Okay, so this is my next bit of breaking news that I had to tell you. It's just really bizarre.
Is it about a dick?
No. Oh. It's not dick or poo related. It's not. We're free of that this week. But this is about weather. Okay, so Dubai, one of the hottest, driest places in the world, often has temperatures around or above 50 degrees for days at a time. And, you know, the one of the places with the least amount of rainfall in the world, have come up with this thing where, because they do actually get quite a lot of cloud cover. So they've come up with this thing where they've sent drones up into the clouds that electrocute the clouds in a way that like does something to the ions in the clouds and forces the clouds to start raining.
Uh-huh.
And so they've like figured out a way to like get, and there's been like monsoonal rain in Dubai for like the last week because they manipulated the clouds to rain.
Was that a malfunction or they wanted that? They wanted the monsoon
rain? No, they wanted
that.
They're trying to force rainfall. They're trying to force because they don't get enough rain.
Wow.
Is it true? I don't know. It seems like a prank to me. Did I read fake news?
Possibly. However, I remember back whenever it was that Beijing had their Olympics, they had some sort of special rockets that they were going to fire at any rain clouds that were coming anywhere near the Olympic stadium that might ruin the events, particularly the opening ceremony. And that was like this massive breakthrough. And there were lots of skeptics saying it won't work, but maybe they've been refining it and perfecting it ever since
then. I mean, I read this, it seemed legit and they were like, yeah, they've been developing this thing for a while. These drones go in and it's something to do with the ions. And they basically because, you know, there are thunderstorms and rain because of electricity in clouds. And so they basically they fly a drone up into the cloud, electrocute the cloud, and it starts raining. Like, we get really bad droughts here. Like, why don't we do that? Science people. Explain. To us.
Could be risky playing God, etc., but
I don't know.
Who knows?
Who knows? We are really just the original biosphere.
I love that episode so much.
And I mean, that was all my breaking news except to say, like, the Olympics are on and no one cares. Feels weird.
I mean, I never care, so it doesn't feel so weird for me.
No, but I mean, it's usually, I can't tell if it's because of lockdown or whatever. It's not that I usually really care either, but I feel like I can feel the world caring around me. And also yesterday it got announced that Brisbane got the Olympics for 2032 and it was like, oh. Like, remember when Sydney got the Olympics? It was like a countrywide party. I was like 6 years old. I remember it. It was huge. Like people were like, it was like 2 a.m. or something and everyone was awake and I remember everyone on the street was cheering. And yesterday it was like, oh yeah, Brisbane, I guess.
Okay, two reasons for that, I would say. Number one, Sydney, they didn't know for sure that they were going to get it. It was an actual competition, whereas from what I've heard with Brisbane, we were like the only horse in the race.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that.
And so it was sort of like, well, yeah, it's ours to lose. So it was kind of a given. And also, I really do think a lot of people right now, all they're thinking about is how long is this lockdown going to last? They are not thinking about anything happening beyond next year, let alone next decade.
Yeah, so, that's true.
Excitement will probably build as the time draws closer.
Suppose.
Provided we're all still here to witness it, because we've got a pandemic and a rapidly changing climate that could stand in between us and the 2032 Brisbane Olympic Games.
Okay, I just feel like I want to put in a little disclaimer here that Jacob and I are two of the most least informed people on the planet. Please listen to everything we just said with a grain of salt, because we have absolutely no idea what we're talking about. We have a lot of feelings about things of which we know quite little. But I think the general consensus is billionaires wasting money on egotistical things is bad.
Disgusting.
The government has bungled this vaccine rollout.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the Olympics will be more exciting closer to the time.
We're all losing hope and our optimism is fading. Cynicism is taking over.
And that was breaking news.
Can't believe no poo after no 3 weeks in a row of poop talk.
I told you I don't go looking for it, but when I come across it, I include it in the headlines. And there has been nothing this week. So there you go.
Can I just add one thing to the Jeff Bezos thing? This tickled me. Last week, a study came out that proved that, you know, howler monkeys, they're the loudest animals on Earth.
Yes.
They make this awful shrieking noise, and they've proven a direct correlation. The louder the male howler monkey is, the smaller its genitals are. Conclusive proof across thousands and thousands of specimens. The loudest howler monkeys have the tiniest bits and bobs. It's such a beautiful metaphor, is it not?
Oh, I'm not in the least bit surprised. I'm not in the least bit surprised. And look, that massive dick rocket was very loud. So. No.
You're telling us so much about yourself, Mr. Bezos.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Mr. Bezos. Okay. All right. So I thought this week I would do a story with a little bit of hope and optimism in it.
Ooh.
Sort of. It has some. Mm. It's also just a really cool story. I feel like we've done some detail-oriented episodes the last few weeks. I thought, let's just tell a really cool story about a really cool thing. So mm-hmm. in 1987, there was a news event that brought the entire world together.
Uh-huh.
People did not stop watching their TVs for days. The First Lady of the United States even postponed surgery until she knew the outcome of what was going on.
Uh-huh.
I am giving you just the gist of baby Jessica, the little girl who fell down the well.
Oh!
Do you know about this?
No, I feel like it's a TV cliche that I didn't realize was rooted in reality.
Well, the Simpsons episode where Bart pretends to fall down a well is based on this, which has that brilliant, I think it was probably one of the first times a TV show ever satirized a big charity number that 500 celebrities are a part of. Do you remember we're sending our love down the well? Sending our love down the well. And Krusty's like, down the well. Old school Simpsons is the best.
It's, yeah, iconic and the only Simpsons as far as I'm concerned. Everything from 2000 onwards does not count.
Not great.
But it's a really old cliche, right? Like Lassie was doing Timmy's Fallen Down the Well episodes way back in the 40s or 50s, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, I suppose it probably did happen a lot, considering people used to have access to water by having 20-foot deep holes in their backyard.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say a lot of kids fell down a lot of wells. But this one happened in 1987 when we had 24-hour news coverage. So this is probably the first one that the whole world was invested in together at the same time.
Okay, give us the gist.
Okay, it's 1987. It's a little town called Midland in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Baby Jessica McClure, and I so wanted her dad to be called Troy, but he's not.
Oh.
I'm I'm Troy McClure. You may recognize. Wait, what? Do you know any of his famous ones? You would know.
I'm Troy McClure. You may remember me from such cautionary videos as Alice's Adventures Through the Windshield.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Unfortunately, her dad is not called Troy. It's a baby Jessica McClure is 18 months old, and she's actually almost the same age as me. She was born in March 86, and I was born in May 86. Mm-hmm. Her parents are practically babies themselves. Her mum, Sissy, is 17, and her dad, Chip, is 18. They're high school sweethearts. Mm-hmm. Sissy's sister runs a family daycare, and, you know, that's where you have little kids come to your house to look after them. And Sissy helps out at that daycare. So Jessica often spends the day there while her mum and her auntie look after all these kids. Mm-hmm. One day, October 14 to be exact, the kids are playing in the backyard and Sissy is watching them, but she runs inside really quickly when she hears the phone ring. And, I mean, it's not really a big deal for a couple of reasons. Like, first of all, everybody has to answer the phone, every parent, like it just happens. Mm-hmm. And also it's a house in a packed neighborhood. So it's like house after house, after house, after house. And they all have backyards where you can just see into all of each other's backyards. So it doesn't feel, they're not in the wilderness or anything. She's not just like running inside and leaving them on the road. Like they're in an enclosed backyard. Mm-hmm. So she runs inside to answer the phone. She hasn't even been gone 30 seconds when she hears all the kids screaming. So she runs out and they tell her that Jessica has fallen down the pipe. And at first she's confused because there is an old pipe sticking out of the ground in the backyard, but they just never even considered it to be an issue because it is literally 20 centimeters in diameter.
Oh, wow.
Like, so that's, yeah, that's less than a ruler.
Yeah.
20 centimeters in diameter. So they just never even considered it a safety issue because what fits down there? Nothing. But the kids are screaming saying, no, she fell down the pipe. She fell down the pipe. And Sissy's like, what? That's impossible. She goes over, looks down. It's all black in there. They don't even know how deep it is or really what it is because it's just it was there when they moved in. But then she hears faint cries coming from down inside the pipe. She panics, runs inside, calls the police. They get in there within minutes. She's hysterical saying, save my baby, save my baby, save my baby. So this town, Midland, was part of the massive, like, Texas mining boom in the 70s. And, like, that boom by this point had crashed. So now the town is kind of poor and filled with unemployment, but it means there are a lot of people and companies still left in Midland that have special equipment for, like, getting down in deep holes. Like my vibrator. What? No. there's a lot of people who worked in the mining boom for a long time. So their expertise at digging stuff and all that kind of thing. So the police call in some people who have a special thermal imaging camera. Kind of like how the Predator sees things in Predator, just like heat. And they lower that down and they can see the outline of a tiny little person. And so then they lower down a microphone and it takes a while, but soon they start to hear faint little whimpers through the microphone. So they know that Jessica is down there. They know that she's alive. And from the distance they lowered the microphone, they know that she is 7 meters or 20 feet underground. So the pipe she fell down actually, like, mining people came and told them the pipe she fell down actually is like an old well.
Okay, so she's in, like, water. It's not like a septic tank or something.
No, no, no. There's no water. It's just an old, it was once an old well and now it is just this long well hole in the ground, like tunnel in the ground, connected to nothing.
Right.
Just basically a shaft 7 meters down into the ground that used to be there to collect water and now it's just a hole.
Abandoned and left uncovered for some reason.
Well, but I mean, to be fair, it was this tiny pipe that they didn't know what it was. It didn't look like anything could fit in it. It was there when they moved in. You know, I don't blame them for just, you know, whatever. It's this weird thing in the backyard, yeah.
And remind me, how old was Jessica at this point?
18 months old.
Okay, so still kind of squishy bones.
Yeah, still a squishy little bub. Like, so I was trying to put this into context in my mind. Like, my sister's twins are, they turned 2 in April. So this was them, you know, towards the end of last year. Like, what, October of 2020, this was them, like.
Still quite malleable.
Yeah, walking. Walking, but still a little bub.
Yeah,
little bub.
Able to fit in small spaces like an octopus or a cat.
Exactly. So local news had been hovering over the story since the police first went out there. And like, you know, if the little girl had died, it would have just been like, whatever, what a news story. But when they realized that little Jessica was alive, it became an exciting freaking news story. And it didn't take long for it to spread nationally because CNN was a 24-hour news channel that was still pretty new. And it mainly just did boring news stuff that no one really cared about. But they sent cameras in to the house in Midland. And this was the first thing that CNN covered live around the clock. So this was like before they, you know, the OJ Bronco chase, before any of that stuff. This was the first time that the US was really gripped to a news story as it was happening, all watching together. And there had been a girl, so you asked before about other kids, there had been a girl in the 1940s who fell down a well and was stuck down there for 3 days. And that was a big story. There was some news cameras, like very limited television. It was like mainly a big radio story. Everyone was listening in. They were trying, they wanted to know what was going on. When they found her, she had died. So, and that was quite a famous story of that girl. So there was this risk, like that history that this has happened before and the little kid didn't survive. But even without that history, it's just an 18-month-old girl stuck in a well and we are watching live as it's happening as people try to save her. Like, it's kind of for us like the Thai cave rescue from a couple years ago. When all those boys got stuck in the cave and they thought they were dead, but then they went and found them in this air pocket. And how long did it take them to get them out? It took like a week, I think, before they figured out a way to get each of those boys out of that cave.
Which was not Elon Musk's way. This is as much as I remember. He was the arrogant one who thought that he could come up with the elegant design that was going to get everyone out safely and accused everyone who disagreed with him as being a pedophile.
Yes, he did. And this people say, why do you hate Elon Musk so much? And I'm like, well, that was when I first started hating him. He came in and said, I've got this billionaire thing I've designed. And one of the men who, you know, does this thing for a living said to him, thank you so much for, you know, trying to help, but that's probably not really practical for this purpose. We're not going to use that. And then he went on Twitter and I think because his ego was so bruised and called this guy, he goes, he's probably a pedophile. And it was like, oh my God, what is wrong with you? This guy is just, anyway. So yeah,
he's a mess. And what he designed probably looked like a dick, let's face it.
It did. Oh my God, it did. It was shaped like a pretty sleek dildo. And he was like, put them inside this and then pull them along. And it was like, no, because there's like corners and rocks and it won't fit anyway.
God, so predictable.
So yeah, people are watching this live and they're hooked. And so there's cameras there in this tiny backyard pretty much from the start. And as time goes, more cameras turn up and they fill every backyard around. There's like people standing on ladders trying to get, and they're all just surrounding this hole. It's mayhem. So after figuring out how deep baby Jessica was, they decide to like get a diggy thing, like a, I guess an earth mover. And so their plan is to dig a hole next to the well. So dig a tunnel down that runs parallel to the well. And then when they get to the level where Jessica is, dig across, grab her, pull her across, and then go back up the tunnel
dug. Yeah.
Exactly. One of the first policemen on the scene, Andy Glasscock, who definitely didn't get bullied in school, was given the job of lying on his stomach next to the pipe opening, and he would yell down to baby Jessica, and then he would listen for her responses into the microphone they had hanging down there. So his job was trying, you know, to try and help her feel safe, to try and keep her awake, just keep her alert. He said sometimes she would call out for her mama, and he would do things like say, "What sound does a kitty make?" And then he'd hear a little meow, like he was trying to talk to her. They decide not to send any food or water down because they don't know if she has internal injuries. They do pump oxygen down there though. Mm-hmm. So they start digging this tunnel next to the well, and they get about a meter down and they just hit solid rock, rock. They can't go any further. The earth mover diggy thing they've got, it's just not going to do anything. And so this is where things get a little bit like the plot of the movie Armageddon, where like they have to send like, you know, salt of the earth drilling guys into space because they're the only ones who know how to drill through rock. So they have to get in like expert drilling people to come here and try and figure out how to get down to baby Jessica. Mm. And because this town had been part of the mining drilling boom, there's a lot of guys who now work regular jobs, but 10 years ago were expert drillers. Mm. So they get in the best of the best and they start to drill. And by this time it's nighttime. It's been hours and hours. It's loud. Baby Jessica's scared. Mm. And Andy says at one point, all of a sudden through the microphone, he hears her singing, "Winnie the Pooh, Winnie the Pooh, poor little baby."
That would haunt me.
Oh, I imagine any one of my nieces or nephews, and I can't. Mm. Like being down there and being so scared and.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay, so 24 hours later. The country is invested. The world is invested, actually. An entire town, the world's press, rescuers are all surrounding this tiny hole and, you know, this attempted digging hole next to it. And all anybody is talking about is baby Jessica. Mm-hmm. The drill they have isn't strong enough. So then they have to get in this stronger drill. They get in a drill with diamond tipped drill ends because you know how they say diamond is the strongest thing to cut through things.
That's why they're a girl's best friend.
Exactly. Even with those, they only get about a few centimeters an hour before the drill bit completely wears down and they need to get another one. So this is going slowly. Mm-hmm. But finally, eventually, they manage to drill and dig as deep as where baby Jessica is. So they have dug a tunnel next to the well down to the level she is at. Mm-hmm. They then start digging the tiniest little tunnel across to where she is. They're hoping to come in underneath her because if they come in right next to her, they'll crush her or
blast
something.
Blast her. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they dig across hoping to come in right underneath where she is. And this is now where they have to figure out who to send down there to get her. It's incredibly dangerous. It could all cave in. Also, the tunnel they've built across is tiny because they just did not have, the rock was too hard. They just didn't have the capacity. It's a tiny, tiny tunnel going across. They have a circus contortionist from Texas comes in and offers to go down because he can like fit.
Oh.
They also have a policeman, a local policeman who has this condition where he was born without a collarbone. So he can like fold his arms and stuff really weird ways. So they're trying to decide, but then they're like, whoever gets to her first will need medical training because they'll need to assess whether she can be moved, what she needs, what to do. And so they decide it needs to be someone trained. So they decide on this guy called Robert O'Donnell. Mm. He works for the local fire department. He's really tall and really skinny and he's a trained paramedic. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't really want to do it because he's super claustrophobic, but he's like, yes, I'll do it. Of course I'll do it. Uh-huh. So they lower him down the tunnel they've made, and he gets down to the bit where he has to shuffle across in the tiny tunnel they've built across to her side. Mm-hmm. He has to shuffle on his stomach, and he says it's so tight. He is literally surrounded, like every, he's closed in, yeah, shuffling a centimeter at a time because it's so tight. He said it was like trying to shuffle his way through a tight sleeping bag. I know. Can you, and you know you're 7 meters down. It could collapse at any time. Like, I'm not super claustrophobic, but I do. Okay, so when I was in high school, we went on a camp and we went caving in the Jenolan Caves in the Blue Mountains. Mm-hmm. And that is where you kind of go, you have a light on your helmet head and you like do have to shuffle through pretty small spaces. But it's very touristy. The Jenolan Caves, the main caving part's very touristy. Like probably the smallest hole you fit through is like, I don't know, the size of a tunnel in a kid's playground or something. But it is quite scary because it's pitch black and it's all rock. And I remember there were a couple of kids who started freaking out and hyperventilating and they had to take them out of the cave.
Yeah.
Would
I
you?
I would have been one of those kids. I would have been one of those kids. And right now I have to open the door to this closet because...
Oh, no, you're in a closet. Oh, no. I forgot. Yeah.
It's the fear of not being able to turn around. That's what gets me.
Yeah, and you can't, you can't. That was the moments in the cave that the kids freaked out, where it was such a small space, you had to go through on your stomach, and once you were started, you couldn't stop. You had to go through, and that's him, I guess, here.
Wow. Look, hats off to him. That's a really, really effing brave thing to do. It's brave of me to close this door again now to try to
You're so brave going back in the closet.
Courage. Watch me go. Okay.
So he shuffles his way across. He says it's like going through a tight sleeping bag. He gets over into baby Jessica's well. He looks up and he sees her and he says, "Hey, Juicy, I'm here to help you," because her parents told him that was her nickname.
Aww.
"Hey, Juicy, I'm here to help you." She is, get this, she is, and she's been down there for, it's been over 2 days. It's been 48 hours, like over 48 hours. She is wedged above him, one leg dangling down, and her other leg is wedged going upwards so that her foot is stuck between her face and the side of the well. So she's stuck. She's stuck in a total split.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. I know.
Oh, my gosh.
He reaches up to grab her little ankle that's dangling and goes to pull it. She immediately says no and like kind of
recoils,
puts her leg out of the way, recoils, and he realizes that she's too stuck. And he's like, oh, no, like, this isn't going to work. I have to leave her here and go back up. And he said he was just, like, heartbroken, devastated to have to leave her there. But he knew, like, I need to go up and get something or we need to figure out because it's too tight right now.
Yeah.
So he says, "Juicy, I'm coming back. I promise I'm coming back." So then he has to shuffle backwards out of the, through the horizontal tunnel over to his side. They pull him up. He explains to them that it's really tight. And apparently he is so distraught, so devastated that he had to leave her down there that, team members at the time don't want to send him back down. Doctors are like, he's too upset. He's too, like, it might be actually dangerous to send him back down. But he insisted, he's like, no, I told her I was coming back. I have to go back. I have to go back. And so in the end he goes, they try to widen the tunnel just the tiniest bit with sending some drill thing down. But then basically they send him down again with a bunch of like Vaseline and KY jelly. And he goes down, goes across, gets back into her well and just greases her up a lot until he pulls her and she slips out. She slips down. He looks at her and he assesses that she's safe enough to be moved. So he calls up to the people and they lower down a little you know, the little back brace board that they rescue people on, like little
carrier thingy.
So he shuffles through that tiny horizontal tunnel, pulling her along after him, gets over to the fresh tunnel they've dug, straps her to the little carrier, holds it, and they get pulled up together. And the world is at an absolute freaking standstill.
Yeah.
It has been 56 hours.
Wow.
And every single TV channel in the world, every radio station, everything is focused on this hole. They know he's down there. They don't know what's happening. They don't know if she's going to come up. They don't know how she's going to be if she comes up. Nancy Reagan, Ronald Reagan's wife, is in hospital with breast cancer, refuses to go in for a procedure until she sees what happens. Then all of us, although she says, I mean, she was a total F and B-I-T-C-H, I reckon she probably just said that later.
Yeah, but she was trying to humanize herself in that moment. And she's, you know, capitalizing on an opportunity to do just that.
I think when it comes to Nancy Reagan, that's probably exactly what happened. But anyway, that's another show.
If baby Jessica had not been a white baby, then Nancy Reagan would have cared a lot less.
A lot less.
Political.
We're political. Then all of a sudden, Robert O'Donnell holding tiny little baby Jessica rises up out of the ground and the crowd goes crazy.
Absolutely.
The world goes crazy. It is actually a really beautiful moment. It's on YouTube. It's about a minute long clip of everyone waiting, and it's nighttime. There's cameras everywhere and everyone's just silent. Like, you feel like the entire planet is tense, holding its breath. And then he comes up and you see her and you see her little arm move and everyone just erupts.
Wow.
Cheering. Midland, the town, starts ringing all the church bells across the town. Like, everyone is just so happy.
Yeah.
Her parents embrace her and then run after her as she's rushed over to an ambulance. They take her to the hospital, where doctors later say the first thing she ate very happily was an orange popsicle. And they have to put her in a hyperbaric chamber, which is like absolute total clean oxygen for a while, because that staves off gangrene, where she'd lost circulation. The chamber does help, but she does end up needing her little toe amputated on the foot that had been wedged up next to her head. She also has a scar on her forehead and stays in hospital for a few weeks and ends up having to have about 5 or 6 surgeries. But other than that, she is pretty much okay.
Wow.
And she's a phenomenon. Like, baby Jessica is like the world's baby. She becomes the most famous kid in the world. The hospital gets sent so many toys that they have to set aside an entire room to fill it with all the stuff that gets sent to her. Somebody sent her a Shar Pei puppy. So she gets a, those things are expensive. She gets a little puppy.
Oh.
A little Shar Pei.
Cute.
The little ones that look like hairy rats.
Or uncircumcised penises.
Yes. Mm. There is an outpouring of love for her. They meet the president, who, her and her parents meet the president, who says, "We are all her godfathers and godmothers now." They go on Regis and Kathy Lee, which is like the big morning show of the day. Mm. People donate money to pay all her medical bills, which, like, you know, because it's the US, if you were here, your medical bills would just be free. Whatever. They also just donate money to the family. And so the family buy like a nicer house in a nicer neighborhood. Robert O'Donnell goes on Oprah and a bunch of other news shows. He's basically considered, like, if she's America's baby, he's America's fireman. Like, he's America's rescuer. He is America's hero. And then everything just ends happily ever after, and it's lovely.
Wow.
No, that's not true. It goes really bad.
Oh, I had so many questions about how happy their lives became.
Well, so here's the thing.
Okay, so now we're getting the brutal truth of what happened next.
I will tell you straight up that Jessica does go on to have a beautiful life.
Okay, good.
Okay. But look, with all viral fame, things started to turn, which we understand a lot more now, but back then it was very new. Like, it was a shock the way these things come and go very quickly. So first it was people in the town who started turning on the McClure families, saying that fame had gone to their heads and they were spending all of Jessica's money. Like, there were rumors that her parents would go around town saying things like, "Don't you know who we are?" and demanding to get let into restaurants, you know, and stuff like that, which is all just kind of the kind of stuff that happens, tall poppy syndrome, when tall poppy syndrome is involved, I guess. And like, there was also just a lot of rumors that all the money that had been donated to Jessica, they were just spending it all and Jessica wasn't getting anything. And they really weren't. Like, they bought a house because they were a young couple who were renting and barely getting by. So yeah, they bought a cute little modest house and they put the rest into a trust fund that Jessica couldn't touch until she was 25. So that's it. They also stopped talking to the press after a while because they just wanted Jessica to feel normal. They didn't want her to get this idea that she was special or famous because this horrible thing had happened in her life. Most of the toys and the presents they got, they gave to all the children of the volunteers who had helped get her out. But you know, that's, I think that's the way fame goes. Once you've got a little bit, people think they sort of own a piece of you, which means they have a right to speculate about you or tell you what they think of you, because, well, it's like, well, you're famous, so you're common property now. Like, that's just, that's how the game works. So it was very difficult for them. They got a lot of negativity from people in the town. And in 1990, just a couple of years after this happened, the McClures get divorced. There was also a lot of infighting amongst the rescuers and the volunteers because movie offers were pouring in and nobody could agree on who owned the rights to the story or who should get money if they do sell the story or who should make the movie. And so the volunteers kind of split into these two groups and are fighting with each other and never really get along again because all of this Hollywood potential kind of tears them apart. A TV movie was made, actually, in the end. It was released in 1989 and it was called Everybody's Baby, The Rescue of Jessica McClure. And it stars Patty Duke and Beau Bridges as her parents. This... I couldn't find it to watch it, but you can watch the trailer on YouTube and it looks A+, gold class TV movie potential.
Yeah. Show notes, please. We need that.
The saddest part of all of this is probably Robert O'Donnell, the man who went down and pulled her out. So he apparently got really caught up in the post-rescue fame of the whole ordeal. Like I said, he was on Oprah. He was America's hero. He did the TV show circuit. He kind of started just going to the opening of an envelope. Like his boss at the fire station said, you know, there was a difference between like a lot of people. So, you know, in the months after it happened, you'd get into work in the morning and each firefighter would have like 20 messages from reporters requesting interviews or phone calls. Everyone else would just chuck it and he'd sit there on the phone calling every one of them. Right. He, you know, was trying to get a book deal. He was trying to parlay his newfound celebrity into some kind of bigger career and really thought that, you know, his life had changed and things were going to be different for him now. But as with all viral fame and as with actually most regular fame, it started to fade quite quickly. And, you know, I've worked, you know, at a website, like a news and entertainment website, like I worked at Mamma Mia, and I'll tell you, like, it's once your story's not getting clicks anymore, it's over. Like, if you do something that's written up today and you feel famous and amazing, I can guarantee you that tomorrow we will have a story just as big as yours and we forgot you're even there because that's how quickly the news cycle goes. To you, it's this big momentous event in your life that something's happened to you that's getting written up everywhere and, you know, The Project wants you on and Sunrise wants you on and every website wants to interview you and next week, it'll be someone else.
Yeah, yeah. Relevance that's just like how... that is fleeting. No matter how much trauma you went through, no matter how big the story was, something else has to come along to keep
always
people interested. Yep.
Always. And I think, you know, we have a more sophisticated understanding of that now, even though I still think we don't really fully understand it now. I mean, look at every single influencer who is shocked that they're not famous anymore the year after their season of The Bachelor is over. Like, The Bachelor premiered last night and there's a whole new bunch of contestants and it's like the ones who were on it last year, who are they? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That'd be hard for them to adjust to, I think. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he really struggled with that, I think, because at the time it was very new. His kind of viral fame hadn't really happened before. And so he had no reason to assume or understand that it would disappear. Mm-hmm. And he really struggled with that. And they say that in hindsight, it's because he was suffering with PTSD from what was an incredibly traumatic experience.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the fame and the attention and the touring and all of that stuff was keeping him busy, which was ultimately just putting off the inevitable emotional crash that he was going to have. Uh-huh. So when everything quietened down, that's when the PTSD suddenly hit him.
Uh-huh.
He had nothing to distract him anymore because nobody was really interested in talking to him about it anymore. He struggled with painkiller addiction. He lost his job. He moved home with his parents. And his mum said it was the Oklahoma City bombing that finally seemed to trigger something significant in him because quite famously there was a daycare center in that building. So a lot of children died and a lot of children needed to be rescued. And he was watching the rescuers on the news with his mom and he was watching them pull these children from the rubble. And he said to his mother, those people are going to need a lot of help for a really long time. And that's, she said, when she realized that there was more going on than what she had thought.
And that was 1990.
Yeah, I think so. 90? It was a few years later. Uh-huh. Yeah. And not long after saying that to his mother, he took his own life.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh.
He left a note saying, no help from nobody but family, which is so often the case when it comes to mental health. People are all talk. People are always like, you know, thank you for that brilliant thing you did. Thank you for the heroic thing you did. Thank you for surviving what you did. Please, hashtag, are you okay day, blah, blah, blah. But when you actually need help, it's like there's no money, there's no funding, there's no one to help you. What can you do? Like, he felt like there was no one to help him. Mm. Yeah, so.
Oh, that's tragic.
It is really tragic. There's some amazing articles, you know, sort of longer form, our favorite word, investigative articles, written back then after he died, kind of looking into what was then a very new phenomenon. Like, we put him on this pedestal for a few months and then we were like, we don't care about you anymore. I wonder if that affects people's mental health. Mm. So there is quite a few articles from the time like with people exploring that sort of very new concept, which is sadly all too common now. But to not end this on a very sad, tragic note.
Just before you get to the positive, because we definitely want to end on the positive, I think it's so much worse these days, though, because of a phenomenon that you've explained to me several times, the milkshake duck effect.
Oh,
where
yeah.
If that happened today, he would have had his moment of fame and moment of glory, and then people would go digging for dirt
on him.
From his past and start publishing that. And so then he would have ended up becoming a pariah. For some reason, because of some indiscretion in his past, right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, for those of you who don't know, milkshake duck is a term that someone developed for when, you know, people go viral now a dime a dozen. It happens probably, I'd say, once a week. There's this really big viral story about someone who's done something funny or amazing. I'd say the last week it has been TikTok guy who has been revealing New South Wales's COVID numbers before Gladys does every morning at the presser. And he's been really funny. He's this guy on TikTok who does these really funny videos and they don't know how he he's clearly someone was leaking the numbers to him early and he was just like sort of taking the piss and everyone loved the videos. My sister loved them because he's from Southwest Sydney. So there's a real kind of Fairfield Bankstown flavor to them. And then people went back through his old content and found that a lot of it is really awful and sexist and misogynistic and incredibly racist. Oh. So then it took about a week for him to reach this pinnacle where he was on The Project, on all these TV shows, being really funny. And then people were like, and you've been milkshake ducked. Because so milkshake duck is that phenomenon. It's where someone goes really viral and we love them and then something from their past tears them down and it's called milkshake duck because somebody to make fun of this phenomenon, there was once a really funny meme going around of a duck drinking a milkshake and it was just a funny thing that everyone got obsessed with for a day and then somebody tweeted, hey, guess what? Turns out milkshake duck was racist. So now whenever you discover something awful about the latest viral sensation, you say they've been milkshake ducked. And I think it's often a good thing. Like, for example, this guy's past videos were really awful. Oh, and when it came out, I was like, yeah, you deserve it. But it also does happen in other ways. Like people, like it's as soon as somebody, like I said, as soon as somebody reaches even the most minor level of specialness and attention and fame, people will try to tear them down. And that often happens these days by milkshake ducking.
So it's not just a matter of fading out of relevance. It's a matter of, you know, people will find a way to drag you out of the public sphere or shine a light on the worst aspects of yourself in your past. Yeah.
Or take the fame that you have, the fleeting fame that is currently positive and try to turn it negative.
Yeah, turn it to infamy,
Yeah, it's just, what a mess.
On to the optimism.
Baby Jessica is doing great. Like I said, she's basically my age, so she'd be 35 now. She got married young. She has two kids. She works as a special ed teacher's aide. When she turned 25 and got her trust, there was just over $1 million in it.
Ooh.
She said a lot of it, though, got wiped out in the stock market crash of 2008, unfortunately. But there was enough for her to buy a nice little house that she lives in with her husband and her kids, less than 2 kilometers from where she once fell down that well. And it did get covered, by the way, covered with a metal thing that all the volunteers wrote on it, to Jessica, with love from all of us. And, you know, Jessica got interviewed a couple of years ago when it was like the 20-year anniversary of, or 30-year anniversary of when it happened. And she just said that, you know, even today, she doesn't remember a single part of it, has zero memory of any of it, but she does live every day knowing that her life is a miracle.
Wow. Is she claustrophobic?
Look, I can't say I got a chance to ask her, but I didn't read anything. I can't imagine. So, I mean, she says she doesn't remember it, although it would definitely be etched in her brain.
Surely you would think. Yeah. Wow.
I actually didn't see that commented on anywhere.
I have to say, a really small part of me was hoping so deeply that you were going to tell me that Juicy McClure went on to launch Juicy Couture in the early 2000s with the $1 million that she got from her trust.
Oh, what a dream.
That would have just been so poetic and perfect, and I wouldn't have known how you managed to leave that until the very end of the story. Anyway, maybe that happened in a parallel universe. I can't believe they sent him into that hole without lube in the first place.
I know. It seems like such a sort of
101 crude, basic.
But to me, I'm like, it seems almost too crude and simplistic. Like, it's just like, oh no, really? We're just going to cover her in lube and slip her out? Like,
if you're going into a tight space, bring lube.
Says the gay man in the closet.
They teach these things in school, no?
Well, I suppose. Yeah, I guess.
I just can't believe he had to exit and then return down.
I know, poor little Juicy waiting for him. Just the most heartbreaking detail to me is Winnie the Pooh. That makes me want to cry every time I think of it. And when he's like, what sound does a kitty make? Meow. Meow. Oh, I just imagine my nieces and nephews. Like, the twins are not much older than her. Oh, my goodness. How awful.
Wow.
Anyway, we give you just the gist. If you want more, I read a couple of really amazing articles. One from 1995 in the Los Angeles Times by Jesse Katz. I'll put it in the show notes. And one that goes a lot more into all this kind of how the media affects us and stuff that we talked about, also from 1995, called Death on the CNN Curve by Lisa Belkin. That was from New York Times Magazine. I'll put that in the show notes.
Cool.
I also, it's one of those things where there's just 1,000 documentaries about it on YouTube. So I watched a bunch of stuff. I also really recommend watching the footage of her coming out of the ground.
Uh-huh.
And I'll also put in a bunch of links of, a bunch of the interviews with her, particularly one she did with People Magazine and one she did with Time Magazine back in 2017, which was the anniversary. Yeah.
Cool. Well.
Baby Jessica.
That was excellent. Thank you very much.
Oh my gosh, thanks.
I was fully unaware of that.
Do you think we should end this show by doing a harmonizing duet of Sending Our Love Down the Well? Okay.
What a fab idea.
I'll take the top, you take the bottom. Okay, ready? Bye, everyone. Oh, follow us places. You started singing.
At Just the Gist Podcast, at Rosie Waterland, at Jacob William Stanley. Just the Gist Podcast @gmail.com.
All of that stuff.
All of that. Yes.
Okay. All right. Ready? I'll start. 'Cause we're sending our love down the well. Sending our love down the well. We're sending our love down the well. Sending our love down the well.
I don't know where you've got the idea that people enjoy hearing us sing on this thing.
Oh, I don't think they enjoy it. I enjoy doing it.
It's not for them. It's for you.
It's for me. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Listener.